Okay, so we are here. That's far away from you. We are here, Rosh Chodesh Adar, and even though every month is associated with different states, but this is a topic that we find more in Kabbalah Sfarim. In Sefer Yetzira, he writes clearly what every month is connected to, which is great. What makes the month of Adar unique is that in the Mishnah, that means even in the revealed part of the Torah, we have an association to this month, which is Mishanichnes Adar, Marbin Besimcha. When the month of Adar enters, from when it enters, we have to increase in joy. Now, the word simcha, the word joy, is a very big word. And I would like to just begin by acknowledging, at least to simplify, that there is an outer joy and an inner joy. I actually checked up on Google, in English, there's joy and happiness. I was just curious to know in the English language, what's the difference between joy and happiness? And happiness is an external joy. They define happiness as something that you experience, happiness, based on a exterior or a external event. So someone bought you a car, you feel happy. You know, when the Torah says that we're supposed to be joyful on Yom Tov. And again, the Talmud says, how do you do that? So it says, for men, eat meat and drink wine. And for women, clothing and jewelry. The Torah calls that simcha. But this is a external type of simcha, / in English, happiness. And I don't want to minimize that at all. I think it's great for us to appreciate happiness. But I don't want to speak about an external happiness that is externally stimulated. I want to speak about a deeper inner happiness. We're supposed to be happy the whole time. There are many things that we're supposed to be. Just because we're supposed to be a certain way, it doesn't mean we are that. But it's important to understand what it is. It's important to understand where it comes from. It's important to understand what gets in the way. So it gives us a greater ability of knowing where we're at vis-a-vis where we need to get and different ways of getting there. So first of all, we're not going to be speaking about a type of simcha that is brought about by external factors. There, it's an easy path. You want to be happy? Whatever it is that makes you happy, do more of that. Yeah, you're happy because you have wine? Have more wine. You're happy because you're getting things? Get more things. There was a place for that. That's not the topic of tonight. What is the topic of tonight is that there is an inner feeling of, in English, joy, also included in the word simcha. And the key insight that we have in Hasidus is that you never need to do anything to experience that type of simcha. If you were to ask a person, define life, what would you answer? How do you define life?
Your experiences?
No, not experience, life. It's not so easy.
The time
it's a born. Spiritual thing, but what is it? Give another word to life.
Existence.
Existence, okay, good. Who else can propose another word? What is life?
Chayes.
Huh?
Chayes.
What does chayes also mean?
When someone is excitement?
Joy. I want you to know that one of the closest definitions of life that you'll find in the Torah, sometimes, first of all, existence is right on. Whoever said that, existence. You have movement. Words in the Torah, movement is connected to life. When people are alive, there's movement. You have warmth and joy. That means that when I am in touch with my life, I will automatically be joyful. Hold on, don't get nervous yet. So there is the joy or the happiness that is a result of me doing something, getting something, or not needing to do something. Again, externally stimulated. That's external. That's valid externally. And the inner type of simcha, an inner joy, remember, doesn't come from anything other than you, than your life. Life is joy. Where do we see this? Look at a child. Look at a child. Does a child need a reason to be joyful? Absolutely not. A child is naturally joyful. We all have that in us. However, if something is getting in my way, if there's something bothering me, that will take the joy away from my life.
It
makes it difficult for me to be in touch with it. Very well, I stand corrected. Yeah, it cannot take it away, but it covers it over. It distracts me. It does not allow me to be in touch with...
It blocks it.
It blocks. It's a block. How can I be in touch with my life when someone is stepping on my foot and I'm feeling pain? This is something simple, but not simple. And therefore, this will be the key. If I am told that when the month of Adar enters, there is the ideal of me adding to my joy. So most people will go, okay, what do I need to do to get more joyful, right? And the answer is don't do anything. What you do, that work, the work is, let me identify in me the things that are hurting me, that are anguishing me, that are making me feel uncomfortable. And if I can identify clearly what they are, and if I can remove them, then the joy will be there automatically. Okay, so far so good. Now I want to go to another step. And everything that I'm saying now is really just an introduction to Steri that will be addressing joy in the home. What I'm saying now is not home related, but this is an important step to get. That in reality, even people that have clarity of what is it in my life that's blocking my joy or that's taking the life out of me. You have these expressions, it's connected. That person takes all of my chayas away. Even if I can identify what it is, let's be realistic that we cannot succeed, for ourselves as adults in removing all of those obstacles, all of those anguishers. And now what? And what do I do with that? So there is a lot that we can do in understanding the obstacles differently that will allow for me not to see them as great, as monsters as I currently see them. So when people have this hakol letova, which is so true, that means we all believe, and sometimes we actually see and experience that something that appeared to be horrible actually turned out to be a great gift. Not a fun gift, but it was something that I needed. I was here. The only thing that would get me where I need to be was that horrible thing. And in retrospect, I can say that which appeared to be bad was really for the good. Now, we don't see it enough. But when people believe in that and they think about it, they contemplate about that, that gam zu l'toiva, such thoughts will help me and not be joyful. I don't have to do anything to be joyful. They're going to help me tell myself that even though I would prefer not to have that anguishing part of my life, I would prefer not to have that, but since I believe that it's for my good, I'm not going to view it with such animosity. I'm going to tolerate it better. It's going to be less blocking my joy. It's going to diminish the block. Actually, the month of Adar, we spoke about this many times, the names of the months are fascinating because who knows what the word Adar means. what's the pshat of Adar? It's amazing.
Hashem
yeah?
dwells.
Thank you. That, and I want to tell you that we don't have a consistency that every month means something in Hebrew. That does not exist. Some names of the months are not Hebrew. Some names of the months are not a word in any language. They're just an acronym. Elul is a Russian tavis. But Adar is from the few names of the months. Adar means Hashem. Aleph, God is in my home. I'm speaking in my home, in my life as an adult. I'm living with God. God is with me. When God is with me, again, we're not the great tzaddikim. You know, you have certain people, the famous story of Zusha. There was a great tzaddik who, when it said in the Mishnah that you have to bless God for the bad, the way you bless him for the good, he said, come on. Someone said, how can that be? You can't bless God the same way. So they told him, go ask Zusha, he'll tell it to you. And Zusha was a person that had a lot of challenges that were known to everyone. Not he had health, not he had issues with children, he had no party, everything was going wrong for him. So the person came and Zusha, can you explain to me the Mishnah where it says that you gotta bless God for the good the way you bless God for the bad, bless for the bad the way you bless. He says, I won't know, I would not know what this means because I never experienced bad. And he meant it. We're not on that level. We're not looking to get there. We're not looking to get there. I think it's too far away from us. But what we could get is that the more we are God-centric, the more we are God-centric, the more Hashem Aleph Dar, the more I'm able to change my attitude with whatever it is I find so difficult or so unbearable. So I think these words are so far so good. Okay, so I just want to recap because there's a map over here, and it's good to have a map. Number one is that there is an outer joy and an inner joy, and tonight's topic won't be about outer joy. Outer joy, we all know. Everyone knows what is it that if you get or if you do, you feel happy. We'll call that in English happy. That happiness is short-lived. It's short-lived. Nothing wrong with it. But if you rely on that, then you'll constantly be running after, chasing after whatever it is that makes you happy. And there is a good part to it. It's good to have that, but it's not good to base your life on that because it's going to be a never-ending pursuit with no end. Inner joy, remember that you don't have to work on simcha. You don't. You have it. It's in you. Your type of simcha. Simcha doesn't have to mean you're dancing. There's an inner type of joy that when we are alive, we have. It comes together. A corpse doesn't have a simcha. A living person, you think about it, you're filled with simcha. So the question is, why don't I feel it? Why don't I touch it? Because things are getting in the way. And we are walking around bothered by so many things. If we can get rid of them, get rid of them. But go good luck with that. Some things you can resolve. Most things we cannot resolve. We have to change our attitude. And changing our attitude is something that we can all do. I don't have to change it completely, but I can diminish the way I look at it. I have an uncle, maybe, well, he's by now, I think, pushing 90. And my father and his brothers were four Zionists of that generation. And they all had textile factories, which was a typical Ashkenazic way of earning a living. Labor in Brazil used to be very cheap, very cheap, and many of these machines are humongous. My father had a machine that was two stories tall, one machine. And so land is cheap, so you have these monsters of, everyone has their factory, and you have these machines, and you have these workers, and you have the good and the bad of any business. One uncle had a sewing business. Sewing machines are this big, little machines. And he got into financial trouble. And he got into big financial trouble. Brazil. So he went to a Fabrengue. He went to, this is when the Rebbe was alive. And people were not that comfortable during the Fabrengue going up to the Rebbe when they're singing and starting to unload. But necessity makes you do things that you don't want to do. And he was in such financial straits that was his solution. The solution was almost like to put the Rebbe on the spot. And he had the courage, and he walked up, he climbed on the benches. Very few people did that. And you can hear all this because the Rebbe has a mic. And even though people are singing, you can hear the conversation. He tells the Rebbe that that bo mayim ad nafesh, that means the water, I'm drowning. I can't take it. So the Rebbe asked him, he wasn't expecting that, how big are your machines? He said, he couldn't believe it. The Rebbe knew that from all of his brothers, he has little machines. So he goes like this. So the Rebbe asked him, how is it possible from a machine this bit little, your problems are that big? The Rebbe didn't give him a solution at that moment. The Rebbe did not even give him a bracha, the way we would expect a bracha as a child, save me. No. The Rebbe gave him an adult bracha. The Rebbe was telling him, change your attitude. Doesn't mean to, God forbid, minimize financial anguish. It should not be minimized. But we should admit that that which is anguishing on a very deep level for very unhealthy reasons that we have in us, that we're not going to get rid of so quick, we love to make it worse. Whether it is a person wants to be a victim, whether it is a person has a certain weakness and they want to justify it, there are deep reasons why we all do this. We all have these illnesses. And this is not to minimize anyone's anguish. But we all are able to change our attitude, we adults, that which we are making in our minds to be that big, if we would only see it as a little bit smaller, not that it doesn't exist, and not that we should stop trying to change it, we should, but when we somehow have a different attitude with it, we are able to see it in a way where it's not going to be taking all of the life out of us, only got a little bit of life out of us. So you just got yourself a little bit of life. But you didn't get yourself life because you got joy, because you're making space within you to experience joy, which is a crazy thing. Just make space for yourself to experience that which you already have. Now, we're not blaming the victim, because most people can say, what are you talking about? There is someone that's really hurting me. What do you mean, make it little? Yeah, it means that try to stop that person. Don't give your whole life for it. And yeah, and you'll have to learn. We have to learn. If not, we won't have a life. What are you going to do? What else would you do? Change your attitude towards it. The greater the person, the greater they're able to do it. Here, words won't help. What you believe in will not help. You have to experience it. Because if I believe it's litova and I'm not joyful, that is the best sign that there's a lot of work that I need to do to integrate my emunah. Many people, I'm a believer. Are you joyful? The person is going to say, no, I'm not joyful today because I have so much happening to me. Even a person who believes it's l'toivah, they have to integrate their emunah, which is another whole conversation of how one can do it. None of these things happen right away, but we are able, with work, to integrate better our emunah. So in conclusion, the avodah of simcha does not mean to do something to be besimcha. That's a big mistake. Simcha is so powerful that if you put your hand in it, you ruined it already. Just be in touch with yourself, and you'll be filled with joy. And the reason why most people won't feel this is because when they look at themselves, you know what they think about themselves? That person will hurt them, the other person will hurt them, this problem, that illness, real legitimate problems. That's where the mind goes to. Before you go to yourself, you get stuck in those things. And as adults, we have the responsibility to look at it better, not to make believe it's not there, and not to superimpose a falsehood on it. Sheked will never work. The opposite, the emes will work. And it's very hard to get to the emes. Very hard to get to the emes. Because we minimize when we shouldn't. We maximize when we shouldn't. We misunderstand most of the times. Like there's so much going on that could be rectified. But I need to know, what am I doing? And by simcha, for an adult, I'm not looking to get the joy. I'm looking to remove the obstacles. And removing the obstacles is something that's completely in my hand. I'm able to do it. And when people spend more time doing it, they automatically experience their unique type of simcha. And now I'll defer to Steri.
Okay. So everyone knows how important it is to have a joyous home. And I'm not going to go into how do we be joyous. The rabbi just explained, and everybody has to figure their way. But for a child, like he said, a child is naturally joyous. If you look at a child and they're at the park and they're running carefree, they're naturally joyous. We don't need to make them joyous. We need to make sure that they just stay joyous. And how do we do that? So first we have to remove any obstacle that is causing them from feeling the joy. And we can all refer to Maslow's hierarchy. Does everybody know the pyramid? Mm-hmm. Very basics. We need to give our children the basics, starting from physiological. Physiological, are they hungry? Food, clothing, sleep. If they're hungry, if they're tired, if they're cold, they can't be happy, obviously. That's like the basics. We see that with babies. They cry, they need to be changed, they're hungry, they're tired. That's the basics. Every child needs to receive the basics physiologically. The next level, safety and security. Does the child feel safe? Do they feel safe at home? Is another child hurting them? Do they feel not safe because there's yelling in the house? That is a key ingredient in a child being joyous. If they don't feel safe in the home, they can't feel their joy. The next level is love and connection. We all love our children, but do they feel the love? Do they feel the connection at all times? When they're having a tantrum on the floor, do they feel the connection and the love there? That's the next. I'm not going to go into details because we can spend the whole night. The next level is self-esteem. Does a child feel respected? Do they feel seen for who they are? If a child doesn't feel respected, you don't let them think for themselves, make choices for themselves, they will not feel respected. The way you talk to them, the way you look at them, the way you act to them, are you doing it respectfully? And then the top is self-actualization, that a child needs to know that they can be the best that they can be, their version, not your version. Can I be myself and can I still be loved? These are many layers. If a child doesn't feel any of these layers, these are just the basics of what a parent needs to give a child. I know that's like so much already, but if you can get to that place, and if there's any part that you want me to go into, because I think it's a lot, that is going to make a child joyous. Anybody want to talk about
it? Yes, one similar point. In other words, by an adult, I think it's expected of us, even when the things that are
challenging and
hard for us are there, we can expect of ourselves to somehow manage that so it shouldn't get in the way of the inner joy. But a child cannot be expected to do that.
And a child should be able to express their emotions. If we are going to tell them, nothing happened, it's okay, just be happy. A child cannot do that. A child needs to express their emotions, whether it's a good emotion, a bad emotion. We have every type of emotion that comes up. Just we know that we can do something with the emotion. We're angry, are we gonna punch the person? No. A child needs to be able to express their emotion. I'm so sad my mommy left. I'm so frustrated I didn't get what I wanted, or I have to go, can't stay at the park longer. Helping the child identify what they're feeling you're already won half the battle because they feel that you are with them. That's key over here. Sometimes with a teenager, it's really hard. And just asking, hey, what's going on with you? They can maybe identify it, or they can't identify, but they can start expressing, and you can help them along expressing that and help them problem solve. But a child cannot feel like they cannot express what they're feeling. So important in helping them, especially young children. They have tantrums. They don't know. Sometimes we don't know. Are they tired? Are they hungry? But helping them, I see you're really frustrated right now. I see you're really upset. I see you really, what can I do right now? What can we do to make you feel better? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, if the child is not joyful, that means there's something is bothering them.
Is it okay, like I just recently heard someone say, like, don't say, because this is what I usually do, like I see that you're really angry, I see you're really frustrated, but someone just recently told me, like, don't say that because then you're labeling it for them. But I feel like some kids
can't express. Right? If a child can express, let them wait until they can express what they're feeling. Don't put words in their mouth. But sometimes just being, first of all, I know as mothers and when the kids are little, it's so hard because you get all riled up in like triggers. There's so many triggers that we, and that's another whole session, that all of a sudden like, oh my God, they're not listening to me. They're disrespecting, or how could they say that? How could they do that? We get so caught up in our emotions. But if you can get to a place like they're just a child, and they're going through something, and it's not about me, and let me just be with them in my calm, and let them know I'm here in my calm, and I'm not reacting, it's a whole other ball game for the child. And then you're really there and present for them with whatever they're feeling, as opposed to a whole control and struggle and who's gonna win, because a child does want to, I mean, that's the struggle, is they want to feel they have control. And if you're fighting them, you're losing the battle already. If you're coming to them in a place where you have no emotions, strings attached, I'm coming because I want to be here with you in your emotion, understand what you're going through, you're ready, won the battle.
I think that also goes for adults, when you're dealing with adults. I mean, people want to feel understood, they want to feel respected, they want to feel heard, and a lot of times our own egos are in the way, so someone will say this, and then you're not responding. This is the problem I have. You're not responding to what I said, you're responding to what they want to say.
Right.
People want to talk, and you know, you want to be heard, so if they just keep talking at you, it's a lack of communication, and you're not feeling valued or honored.
I agree. With one difference, that an adult, even if no one is listening to you or to me, so I'm not getting what I need, I'm still able to negotiate with that inside of me, to minimize it, getting back to allowing my joy to come forth. Kids cannot do that. In other words, so kids, like, if we're not going to remove the obstacles, they will not be joyful. And by an adult, even though we should remove the obstacles and we should help each other remove obstacles, but at the end, it's still expected of me, whatever it is, right now, reconnect to your joy. And that's something that we cannot tell to a child. Can't tell a child, be b'simcha. Guy says, how can I be b'simcha? I'm hungry. Look at an infant. Like, what are you talking about? He needs to be fed.
So many things.
I know, by the way, I'm like, I'm holding back every single question, and then, like, it's not a personal session.
I actually telling them to be Simcha when I'm taking them for fun stuff the whole day, killing myself. And they start to cry. Like, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to, you know? Like,
if I take my kids to fun stuff with the presumption that they therefore should be the simcha, I missed the first step. Their simcha, my simcha, doesn't come from outside things. The simcha that we would like for us to have and for them to have much, much more meaningful than the joy of the smile when they get the candy. Infinitely is the inner joy. And the beauty is, it's there. Problem is, there are things getting in the way. And I'm only focusing on why are, like, if they're not the simcha, the question is, what's bothering them? That's the question. Not that since they don't have something, they're not joyful. No. There is something that's anguishing them.
And how can you teach that? To, like, if you have a, I'm not talking about a child who's like hungry or tired, but let's say you have a teenager or preteen who's, I don't know, having a social issue at school, let's say, and so they're sad. So you can identify what the issue is, whether or not they could, but how do you teach them? You can't take away their problems.
No.
So now they have an issue that's blocking their joy. What do you do as a parent to help either unblock that or teach them to unblock that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, them being heard will minimize it, like an adult. Think about it yourself.
Ask more questions so you understand the full scope of it. Like sometimes you can hear, okay, a child is, let's say another child is bothering them. Like what about that is disturbing, or what are you feeling when they do that? Like just go into it as opposed to just problem solve. Because they really just want to be heard and they want to share their feelings and share how they're, you know, hurt they are, how disappointed they are, how embarrassed they were, and just, I hear you. I know that really must have felt terrible, you know, just really being with them, and it's not so much, you may then come to, what do you think we should do about this? Because sometimes they don't want to really hear the solution from us.
So that helps unblock some of the joy.
Because they themselves may think of something that you may not think of, that, oh, it's just a little thing and that's it. When we come up, oh, you have to be strong, or don't think that they're better than you, or whatever it is, that's not what they want to hear. They want just to release whatever they're feeling, and they themselves can come up with a solution, especially teenagers. But if you, like, ask more, you'll get more information than exactly what happened.
Rabbi, behind you. Sorry. You were talking about simcha. I'm sorry if I missed this because I came late. But is simcha also connection, like dealing with connection?
Simcha is a state. It's a state. I'm not talking about outer joy. If you felt it, you know what it is. And I don't think everyone's joy is the same. Everyone has another shade, another flavor of simcha. I don't think it's connection. I actually call it life. I feel alive. Feeling life without someone putting their knee on my neck. Get your knee off my neck. Remember that?
Can I just answer what your question was? So first of all, the memories that we have is more of like what the feeling was, what the ambiance was. Let's say your kids went, you took them to an amusement park and they're, I mean, just know this is the reality. At the end, they're crying. Like, that just happens always. But it's more of the way that you're going to react to it, that like you're going to get frustrated and angry, then the whole trip, that's what they're going to remember. You're going to be, okay, no, I mean, they're at the end of the day, they're tired, they're hungry, they don't know what they want, really. But it's
that's
more
why they're crying.
Your reaction is what they're going
to
hold.
Or because they want to buy another thing that they notice. So, like, you know, like...
Well, first of all,
like
another thing is setting boundaries.
Right.
That's another whole topic. Because if right away up front you set boundaries, they know already going in what...
Okay, it's not about me. They stop me if it's me.
But this is universal. They're going out on a trip.
But like I'm telling them like before we're going, usually it's in carnivals, like when they
it's overstimulation.
When you need to buy that and like they know it's when it's like they know it's not kosher, right? So like they tell me about a toy, it's not kosher, right? Toys are kosher. but like when it's kosher, so they like they want this and this and this, so I'm saying each one can choose one and then they're jealous because they choose whatever. And then he got whatever they choose, and then, but I'm preparing them before.
Right.
But then when it happened, it's a whole tantrum,
because the other one had something that they wanted.
And then they see it in their face and it's in front
also
of
like
their
we
face.
As parents, we don't want our kids to be spoiled. Like,
but that's the thing.
So when
kids
they
just
have like,
no,
sure,
it's enough. Because
right.
Each one getting
it,
one.
Yeah.
And like,
I mean, they have
they
to also
no
learn
to
what it means to feel frustration. Because
right.
We give in to our kids so easily.
Right.
They don't feel what frustration. So that's spoiled kids. You know, they get whatever they want. They never
right.
Need to wait for anything. But if you're telling them up front, you can choose one thing, whatever you want, but one thing, and then they come, that's what you chose. Maybe next time you could choose what your brother has.
Right. And a hug, and it's a bit of a prank.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
It's okay. Maybe your brother wants to give you a lick or share with you or whatever. Like, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be a big deal, but when you set boundaries, it's clear. Once you break those boundaries, that's when commotion happens. Like, oh, but he got a big one, and I got a little one. Like, that's it. One thing, whatever it is. I mean, I remember taking my kids to Munchies, and like, I hate the candy stuff, and they knew right away there are certain no's. Absolute, those big lollipops that look like for a whole month they eat it. There's certain things, no. Those jawbreakers, you know, no. But certain things, you know, and I would always wait until they all chose, okay, is this what you want? You're happy? Yeah, go pay. That's it. It's okay to say no. We have to know that. We have to be parents,
right?
We have to set boundaries.
We have to expect that our kids should not have some sense of entitlement, or that our kids should not have some jealousy, or our kids should not be a bit spoiled. That expectation is only fair if we are okay. And actually, probably, whatever bad, unrectified attribute we see in our children, we're seeing ourselves. And we actually find it very convenient to point there. I'm not talking to you personally.
But I am.
Yeah, but exactly.
100%.
Yes.
Sari, what was the self-actualization you mentioned in the last one?
That a child should feel that he can become the best that he can be. Not what you want, like,
right.
You're going to go to karate after, and then you're going this, and you're, no, but you know, when you wanted karate, you're going to karate. In general, just to know, like, children want to try a million different things. Their friend is going this and that. Make a rule. If they go to something, they have to do it for a year and a half.
Oh.
And if they don't like it after a year and a half, they can change to something else. Otherwise,
from what age?
I mean, when they're younger, obviously a little less time.
What age in general?
I don't believe in these big things unless there's a certain talent that you see and the child wants to develop it. I don't think they're going to become the big karate, you know, person, or they're going to become the, you know, professional ballet dancer. But it is nice to expose to them if they want, not because you want. You want to be, you know, gymnastics, and so you're putting your kid in gymnastics. Could be they're going to like it. Maybe their friends go, but it's always like you're running, and really, I mean, from what I learned moving from Brazil to here, Brazil, we didn't have much of anything. After school, we're going bike riding, we're going swimming, we're playing games. Sunday, when we moved here, everyone's like, Sunday fun day, where are you going? I'm like, we're staying home. We're going shopping, and we're, you know, doing some cooking, preparing, or whatever, and we're home. Like, you don't need to, like, run after what you think is the best. The best is home. That's the best.
Well, you weren't fighting screens back then.
True.
For real. It's really a challenge.
It is.
Like,
true. No,
better
that's
to
another
get out
goal.
Of the house when you're home. It's
but,
kind of a default.
Yeah,
even if you don't, like, you don't allow screens
you,
during the week.
You,
but like on
yeah,
Sunday,
that's what I'm saying. You have to set boundaries. Otherwise, it's addictive.
It's really a year and a half, not say, like, one session.
You don't get enough understanding.
There's eight classes per session or whatever. To me, I'm like, if I signed you up for the whole thing and I paid for it, you're going. But then, like, to then have to.
Do you want to keep changing every eight classes?
Well, is it teaching them? That's the thing.
It's teaching them. Yeah.
Teaching them consistency.
It's first of all committing.
Completion.
You want to try. They're excited in the beginning, so why are they not excited after 8 sessions. Because it's getting hard, because it's getting boring, it doesn't matter. You're committing to something. I mean, every child's different, so you have to know your child. But I always thought it's like, oh, everyone's running here, running there, running, you know.
I have more like an existential question on the topic. Why is it, because I'm a very new mother, so I'm still dealing with a baby phase.
Yeah.
And I realized why, I asked myself the other day, why is it that it's easier to provide for them and make sure they're perfect and have everything they need and they eat healthy and you take care of all the details, but we don't do that with ourselves or with our spouse. And if the kid sees that there's an inconsistency, how am I gonna make him believe me?
You're not. It's not about your words or what you do.
It's the spouse, it's the kid. It's like, how do you deal with...
It's what you model. If they see that you're eating junk food, I mean, he may be very little now, and it's good that he's getting all his taste buds with vegetables and all that, but as he gets older, he's just going to model what he sees. Yeah, that comes in everything. You can want your kid to be a certain way, but if you're not that way, we want our kids so much to be disciplined, go to sleep one at a time. What about you? You're up till 1 o'clock. Are you scrolling? Like, what are you doing? Everything, they know everything, they feel everything, and they're going to model. They're not going to do just because you said you want them to do it.
Do what I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
I love that.
I have one question in the back. Hi.
Hi.
What tips do you have for making children feel more safe? Because I feel like in our home, my stepson Danny, safety is like his number one thing. He wants to feel safe at all times, and I think that was like the key thing that we figured out that helps him. Do you have any tips on like how to...
Well, what is making
what
him
is
not
safe?
Feel
what
safe?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
So for example, like if he's for a while, he didn't want to be alone in the room because he doesn't like that idea. Or like going to sleep in his own bed all night. So we check in on him. And he's not even awake when we do it. But when we do it, when we consistently remind him that we do it, he sleeps the whole night, no problem. So like how can we go ahead and like just expand that to see... What makes him not feel safe is like when there's no one really around him. Like he wants everyone to be...
Well, there's a reason why he's not feeling safe. First of all, the fact that it's working, you have to keep doing that.
Right.
You can't like get away with... That's what's making him feel safe right now.
Right.
To expand that, I think he'll just grow out of it eventually. But you need to figure out... You figured out what makes him feel safe. He doesn't like to be alone.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he doesn't like to be alone. I mean, I grew up also. I had all my stuffed animals all around my bed. I didn't like sleeping by myself. There's no logical reason for it. It's just a child feels like that, and that's what you have to honor.
I just want to add one thing to that, and that's only an addition. It's not to take the place of. And that is that we are believing people. We have a mezuzah. The child kisses the mezuzah. We say the Shema. We tell our children, Hashem is with you. In addition to us checking in on them, in the long run, it really goes a long way. We have certain things that we're born into it, and we don't appreciate enough of how powerful it is, including in the ultimate feeling of safety for us adults, will only come because Hashem is with us. Mm-hmm. Aleph Dar. And it should begin young, in addition to the parent being there.
That's also a very good point, because we do the Shema and Hamal HaGol, but I don't think we ever like sat there and explained to him like the importance of that. And I think that
was
really click.
Yeah.
He would love it.
Show him like the inside of a mezuzah. Like show it to him and tell him what the Shema means, and it means Hashem protects us when we're in our house and even when we're outside of our house.
Yeah.
All this just concretizes safety.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned self-confidence. One of the levels, and if you have a child that's struggling with self-confidence and maybe turning to external things, like if I have this toy or if I have this kind of clothing or if I look this way or have, you know, whatever, is there a way to help a child build self-confidence in a healthy way? Like,
it really starts from when they're very young and then feeling that their environment that is just accepting of who they are. I mean, it starts from very young, but once you get old, it's very normal for teenagers to not feel good about themselves and think, you know, this is going to make me feel good, but just keep telling them the things that are inside of them.
I feel like a lot of kids, you know, when they're young, every kid stands tall with good posture. The only
they
thing
feel amazing, and then all of a sudden
they go out into the world and they're like, oh, I'm not as this as that person, or that as this person. And the messages they receive out in the world can make them suddenly feel not self-confident. I don't know, I've tried to say to my kids, you're a unique neshama, we're created in just this way for your unique purpose, but that's like so abstract.
Do you lend them your car?
No.
There you go. Trust.
None of my kids have.
Well, they need a license.
Because when they get a license.
When they get a license, do you lend them your car?
In other words, to hear for them to hear from the parent that you're beautiful,
yeah,
or you're talented, they don't buy it.
They don't.
But when we do something
that shows them.
I'm giving you a good example, a down to earth. You lend them your brand new car. That's gonna do something for them. And it's worth it for them to crash it a billion times for that.
That's
even if they
like that.
No, but like that you like.
It's just an example.
Yeah, because it's something so simple
that
brings so much happiness.
Sometimes it's
like,
hard to
what
understand
care
what
other people
their
like
insecurity
it.
Is coming from,
but like you're able,
but
to
they're like constantly turning
okay,
for an external source
no.
of
no, no.
pride.
So I'm saying, like when they're young, are they making choices on their own?
Yeah.
That's a question you have to ask.
Independence, oh my gosh. They children from a very young age need to feel that they're capable beings. And it starts, I mean, from whatever they can do, allow them to do it by themselves and don't step in and do it for them and quickly. I'll do it. I can do it better. I can do it quicker.
Because we're feeding them.
Everything. I mean, starts, I mean, also responsibility. Like when they're young, they take off their clothing and put on their pajamas. Their clothing can go, they can put it in the hamper. They can, like, there's so many little things that, like, if we don't give responsibility, they don't feel they're capable. Oh, you do it. Oh, you do it. Like, they don't feel any sense of responsibility and sense of self if there's no, you don't trust them with anything. Like, they can cut their, you know, vegetables.
Can you
vegetables.
Also just,
they
like,
can
reassure us, and if they were young, and now they're older, we didn't mess up, there's, like, a chance.
Not at all.
We have children. We have kids.
Yeah. We have children. Hashem gave us children when we're young, and,
right.
Yeah, I mean, we all
and
made mistakes.
We have second chances.
Yes, but for sure.
Say it, Sari.
Now, first of all, the relationship that you have when your children are older, it's huge. It may not have been, may have been different. We may not have done everything well, but we can do it better when they're
yes.
older.
Yeah.
100%.
And it's easy to explain to them. Say, listen, I know when you were younger, I didn't do this, but I want to change that part of our relationship.
But I think it could also go both ways. Like a mother who is like a great toddler mom,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden becomes like this adult mom.
She wants them to be toddlers. Yeah.
Yeah, and
right.
that also happens. So
yeah.
I feel like there's like round two.
Yeah.
Like
there are so many correlations between toddlers and teenagers.
I think a lot of parents like baby their kids because they don't think they're capable. I know with our boys, like right after their bar mitzvah, I used to bring them chocolate milk and wake them up, like, and then come back and the chocolate milk is all gone, but they're still rolled over sleeping. After their bar mitzvah, I was like, okay, that's it. You're old enough now, you're an adult.
I think it was way before the Rav Mitzvah.
No, it went quite a while, yeah. I say, you're an adult. I'm not waking you up anymore. You want to wake up, you put your alarm, you come late to school,
is, yeah.
you deal with it.
Not
the like,
note, waking
you
up.
Don't want to go to school, don't go to school, but you deal, you know.
With the consequences.
Work, it always
yeah.
worked.
It always worked. It's like
you're
at
a lot of trust.
And it starts also when they're younger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And in the beginning, they were like, you mean I don't have to go to school? I'm like, know how long you're going to stay home. I don't know, but then they might not let you back in school. I don't know. You'll speak to the principal then. Like, they couldn't believe I would allow that. But when you, it's reverse psychology. It's like, all of a sudden, like, oh my gosh, like, I can choose now. So now, oh my gosh, what time do I have to get up to be ready to go to school? Like, all of a sudden, they become the responsible ones. They can think for themselves as opposed to, my mother's going to wake me up, and then she'll wake me up again, and then she'll wake me up again. And the last 5 minutes, I can roll out of bed, get dressed, and go. It's like, what are you teaching your kids? You're babying them and babying them and babying them. Like, for how long are you going to do it?
So do you reward them when they take responsibility?
No.
Reward if they feel
the reward.
It's not, they're not there to be baby. They're being told that you're retarded.
Also, you don't want them to do because of you, because of Anna. You want them to do because they're taking responsibility.
Even so what if they don't care? Like, what if it's when you talk about that, you like, think, you like homework.
Try it.
I have.
And they deal with their own consequences.
But
yeah,
there's not really real consequences.
So who cares? And they're not doing their homework.
Like, if they don't care about having bad grades,
right,
they're not going
to. Because it bothers the mom that they're not doing
right.
Homework.
No,
that's the
problem. Bothers is an understatement. I'm working on that separately.
Okay.
But I'm saying, I just feel like sometimes there aren't, if a kid doesn't care about certain consequences,
you can't force them to care.
Right.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Things of significance they'll care about.
There's some kids that, like, there's no consequence big enough and there's no reward great enough.
Yeah.
Except if they feel a sense of
self.
Well, listen, if they're failing, there's also a sense, like, you're paying tuition and you're not going to have them fail through elementary school. Like, there has to be also that, like, I'm paying tuition, so I expect you to get at least these grades.
Right, I'm just saying there are parents who need to get involved at some point because not every
It's involved in a different way. It's not involved. It's not goodbye.
And it's not sitting and doing the homework with them every night. If they need help, yes, you're there to help them. But then, you're babying them unless maybe they need someone to help them. So you hire someone.
Since what age?
With homework?
Yeah.
I don't believe in homework, so...
That's real.
I'm sorry. I mean, listen, in high school for sure, like, if they're having a test and it's on so much information, they need to study. Like, obviously, if they do homework, they're reviewing. But, I mean, for younger kids, I think if the teacher's a good teacher and they're listening, then it should be enough. And maybe on Shabbos, oh, what did you learn this week? Let's go see and review it in kind of a fun way instead of, like, but I guess, well, I mean, I don't know. Homework is like, if they have to do homework every day, then they have to have a set time. Okay, we're doing homework now.
No, there's still dark kids.
Yeah.
There are kids that cannot read. There are kids that cannot see well. There are kids that have certain challenges that we should catch. Like, you should become curious. Sometimes kids need tutoring because they cannot keep up in class. And the teachers don't care that much.
Yeah.
We should care. So there's a lot of nuance when it comes to after school schooling.
Right. And if a child gets frustrated, it's too hard for them, then you should get someone, because we don't want them to lose, you know, the desire to learn. Get someone that they'll be excited after school. Oh, she's coming home over, she'll help you with homework.
What about kids who don't know how to put in any effort?
But it starts from when they're young.
Yeah, but when they're young, everything comes easy to them. And then they get to a certain age that, like, stuff's not coming easy anymore. And they haven't learned how to put in effort. And
so,
all their teachers
have
been saying
to
me for years, like, he doesn't know how to put in effort.
What age are we talking about?
Ninth grade.
He's
in high school now.
Sometimes kids like that don't know how to study because they haven't had
to.
So sometimes
somebody needs to teach him how to study. I mean, I wish they taught that in school. Some kids, just had it easy, and then all of a sudden, I don't know how to study.
Yeah.
But this technique.
Any little thing that takes effort, it's like a, everything is just falling apart. He's like a drama queen. He'll, like, fall on the floor, like...
then he needs some help helping him get a few things in place to help him until he gets it himself.
Yeah. Also, I think they grow up eventually. Like with my son, he never did any work in school. And I said, Hashem, I've tried my best. Like, there's nothing more I can do. And he figured it out on his own. Like, he taught himself to cook. He moved to a new city that he didn't know any. Like, he made an amazing life for himself. Now he manages, like, 20 buildings in the CBD in Sydney from doing no homework since kindergarten. And, like, I was like, what is this guy going to do with it? Like, they work it out eventually. Like, he grew up. And he empowered, like, I empowered him, so he was able to do it on his own. Like,
you gave him confidence, you're saying?
Yeah, like, empower your kids that they can do it, you know? They can do it. Just because school wasn't the right place for him, it wasn't. It never was. And I moved into a different. But he's so successful now in every aspect of his life.
My kids know that I'm like, I tell them all the time, like, grades don't really matter to me. Like, my mother-in-law saved my husband's report cards. And, like, every single one says the same thing that, like, all of mine did. If only she would apply herself more. And, like, grades don't really matter. As long as you...
What matters when a person, when they're going into the adulthood, if they are falling apart when something is difficult, that's a handicap that won't be good for them. And so I know your child of this. I don't think he wants to be that way.
Right.
1 second. So what an adult has to do, whether it's a parent, whether it's a friend, whether it's a good psychologist, is that someone has to connect to him. For him to get in touch with his anguish that he's the way he is. It's not about the learning.
Yeah.
And once, in other words, if he doesn't care, if he's saying, I don't care because he knows that I don't have a way out, someone can get to him. Someone has to get to him now. To get him to admit that he doesn't want to be this way. None of us want our handicap. But if we don't see a way out, if a person doesn't have an arm, so they have to make peace with it, so they'll be in denial that they have a handicap. I'm perfectly fine. I'm special. But when a person believes from an adult that you can learn how to deal with challenges better for your good, not for me, I don't care, for you, I can help you do that. Let the child first admit that they want to get better.
You just wait for that?
No. Yeah, it's a conversation. It's easy to get to a child there. He has that already. He just won't admit it. He has to feel safe. He has to be loved. He has to feel respected by the adult. He has to feel there no judgment in the beginning, and he has to believe that there is a way to get better. If I believe I can get better, I'll do the work. If I believe that this problem can never get better, why would I make the effort in vain? All of us are that way. And a young Jewish bacher might know he can be enlightened that not about the learning.
Right, because it's not just about school.
It's not about the learning. That's the point.
Any conversation that there's a little bit of pushback, it's like...
He falls apart.
Yeah.
So now you identified his handicap. You need for him, he's already 13 or 14 or whatever. He has to identify his handicap. He has to identify his weakness like we have to.
We all have... he should know we all have weaknesses. At least it's good that he can see it now and he can work on it.
I just think it's frustrating if you're offering the child help, saying, I will help you, and the child, like, doesn't even see that there's an issue.
Well, I offer a child to help in most cases, especially if I'm a parent. It's about my ego. It's not that much about them. It's about how it reflects on me. There's too much of me involved. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me.
I know, but one thing...
I think when children feel that the adult has their own agenda...
Yeah,
we already lost that.
Every parent's agenda.
So sometimes you have to get someone else to do it. That's why we have teachers, and the job of any half decent teacher, like that, the teacher is not like a parent. They don't have their ego involved. It doesn't reflect that on the teacher as much as it does on a parent. And someone has to get through to these kids. Yeah, it's not possible.
Is that the job of a parent to make sure our kids are successful?
I think that the job of a parent is that if a parent feels that they are unable to get through to their teenage child, which is very normal, instead of fighting the child, let me speak to a teacher, speak to someone else, get someone else to be of influence. Someone in the kid's life will get through the teenager. Sometimes a grandparent can get through to them. I'm going back to, I think teachers have so much potential power in the positive. A good teacher, I can speak for the young Bahra in the Sifta, that what one good teacher can do to our sons, you cannot imagine. You cannot imagine. If he feels that person cares for him, not for his grades.
At the same time, you can have a bad teacher that can really create.
And you can have a teacher that can mamish kill our kids. 100%. Yeah. Destroy. 100%. But I don't think it's the end of the world if a parent cannot help the teenage kids. I think it's quite normal. There's a lot of other stuff going on. They have to individuate. They have to show that they're different than you. And the more they are like you, and they see all of your flaws, so they're terrified that they have it, which Nebuch they do. So they're going to completely rebel. They're rebelling against themselves.
I have a question. So the roles of a parent. So, and I'm a step parent, and and thank God both of the parents, the mother, the biological mother and biological father are very active in the children's lives. How do I make sure that I'm not overstepping my boundary for the kids? Because I know, like, I read books on it and I take classes and they say, like, you know, like, you should be more of like kind of like a coddler in a way, because in a sense, like, they're not tied to you in the same way they are to their parents, and why should they be? It doesn't make sense. So what can I do for myself to ensure that I'm not crossing boundary for the kids and to make sure that I can have a home where they can excel in, but at the same time not go ahead and kind of like, you know, have them like dislike me or have a negative experience?
It depends on the age of the child also. You can be, I assume, that's from my experience, mm-hmm. because I'm a stepmother, and my older children have a stepfather. But if you say that I am your parent and do what I say, that will never accomplish anything. If you acknowledge that the child has a biological parent and you don't bring the all the faults from the divorce or from the back and say, I respect that you have a mother, or I respect that you have a biological, I respect that you have your relationship with that person, and I'm here as a friend to support that relationship and support you growing up, and not to be, you know, to fight that,
right,
or contradict that, or say that that was wrong and how could they do it now better than the other person. Because once you create that situation, then you lose that child,
right? No, of course not, but yeah, so obviously
you just support them, they're confident, support them, you know, I'm here to help you, I'm here to make sure you're safe, I'm sure that provide you with the extra love that you need. I'm not to take the place of the child, of the parent. And they will respect that, and you set that as a boundary, and they will respect that, and you will have a relationship with them. That's how it works for me.
I just want to add one thing. I think it's good to have consistency in the home, and it's not about you being a parent or the biological parent. It's about that every room has a certain rhythm, and it's okay for a stepmom to advocate for the consistency for the rhythm. And I don't think one should expect of themselves to love a child that's not theirs as much as if they feel it, they feel it. You can't force it. And the child will feel it. So if you have an adult that mamish loves them, they'll feel it. If the parent doesn't love them but they don't fake it, they'll be fine. If they'll be sheker, then they'll be confused. That's bad. And that's what I like what you said, Alina, that especially when they get older, I'm here to be your friend. You're telling them basically that I don't expect of myself to love you the way I love my own child. I'll be here, I'll support you, I'll do the best that I could, and you have a mother. You have a mother that's gonna love you as a mother, so if that's now, if you love them the same, you don't even have to say it, they'll feel it. They'll feel it.
So I want to love them as much as possible. I don't know what it's like to have a child to know what it is.
Don't, not yet, God willing, you'll have children.
Yeah.
And just be the way it is.
Okay. And is it okay that I'm a little less like, I guess you could say to the T than my husband is, for example, with the kids, because I have that kind of like, obviously I never, we never contradict each other in front of the kids. It's not like that, but like I'm less strict than like would be their.
So then your kids are lucky. To have two strict parents is in Nebuch. Just one, not really. Good. One parent like this, one parent like that. Good. Yeah, it's fine, just fine.
I have a question about this self-actualization. Are we running out of time? Sorry.
I don't know how long the Atlas recorded was for. Still rolling.
And there's a big dance party, guys. Dancing is.